This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. If you've been to the Salesforce headquarters in San Francisco or certain resort casinos, you'll have seen and been blown away by giant virtual waterfalls that appear on LED walls and then wash down over and around things like entryways. It's kind of amazing and way beyond much of what you see on digital canvases, like big 4K stock videos or graphics. This stuff is part creative, part science. And the company that does this kind of work better than anyone is a little studio that works half and half out of LA and Vancouver. Fusion CI Studios got to start doing special effects for things like disaster movies and action flicks. They virtually part Red Seas, burst dams, and blow things up. One of Fusion's co-founders, Mark Stasiuk, took the weird career path of being a volcanologist with a PhD in geophysical fluid mechanics, who then taught himself visual effects so he could more effectively explain the science. He got good enough at it that Hollywood special effects people started calling him. That science background is the big differentiator between what Fusion can do versus creative shops that are all about the pretty pictures. I grabbed Stasiuk and co-founder Lauren Miller for a call, and we walked through how all this started, their process, and why this level of visuals is so impactful. Hello, thank you for joining me. You guys are in Vancouver today, right?
We are at the Vancouver studio. Beautiful sunny day.
It's Vancouver when it's sunny is amazing. When it's not, and there's a lot of that in January and February, it's a little gloomy.
Indeed. We try to stay in Los Angeles at our studio there as often as possible from December till April.
Just make sure you get your 6 months still in Canada, at least on your side, Lauren, right? Mark, are you Canadian or American?
I'm Canadian too, yeah.
Oh, okay. So you guys both need to be back here for at least 6 months, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
If you want to get the health benefits of it. For the Americans who are listening, going, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, so to the matter at hand, we've not met, but I've been a big admirer of the creative work that you guys have been doing in the last couple of years. And I think that the quick introduction on my side would be anybody who's seen one of these big LED canvases where there's a waterfall, there's a good chance it was you guys who put it together. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it is fair. We've actually seen a few copycat waterfalls lately, which we wouldn't necessarily want to be associated with. But yeah, if you see a big waterfall, it's likely we've done it.
So can you give me the elevator pitch on what Fusion's all about?
Ooh, yeah. Where to start?
It can be a longish elevator ride if it needs to be.
We've spent more than a decade creating photorealistic visual effects for the motion picture industry and television as well. So that was our focus for years. And then as screens started to move out of movie theaters and our living rooms and to be found everywhere, our work was asked for on screens in, you know, public display spaces. Because one of the very exciting things about working in motion pictures is that these visual effects can now influence what we do on art installations. And that's been pretty exciting for us.
So when that came up and you had people approaching you saying, we have this big video wall or whatever, did you have your head around what that even was?
Yeah, it took me longer than it took Mark, I think, because, you know, we were just so focused on motion pictures and what that meant. But it didn't take us that long to really start to think of the potential. That's one of the things that's still a big deal right now for us, is that these screens have such incredible potential. And that is being realized in a lot of these installations. But in fact, we get a lot of clients. We have really good partnerships with a number of digital display suppliers. And we find that these enormous screens are installed and then the content is wondered about.
Yes. It's a very common story.
Yeah. And yeah. A lot of times what they're playing are these, you know, beautiful images, no doubt about it, you know, mountains and forests and lakes and oceans. But we'd like to see that three-dimensional potential of the screen and its ability to tell a story used a little more. And so that's what we try to talk to people about.
So I don't know if I want to call us your most famous, but walk listeners through what you do with your waterfalls effects.
Do you want to take that, Mark?
Yeah, sure. I can speak to that. Yeah, so springing out off our background in the film and TV industry, where we really did a lot of what we call dynamics work. So it's like physical simulations of things like fire and particles and avalanches and water, a lot of water in our work. We've like done things like parting the Red Sea and that kind of stuff. In fact, we did. We parted the Red Sea twice in 1 year, actually.
I love how he says that so casually.
I don't do interviews very often with people who just casually say they part the Red Sea, but
yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of the things. So, yeah, we've done all kinds of physical dynamic stuff out of that industry. And so that's the approach that we come out of things that people, you know, are really fascinated by, like organic physicality of that kind of stuff. And when we approach something like the waterfalls, like in the Salesforce building or the MGM Cotai, we take the same approach. We do it through a very high-res physical simulation where we really are physically creating the water with physics. And then we also do photorealistic rendering where we do physics-based rendering on it to get it as real looking as absolutely possible. And that process is, you know, it's kind of long-winded because these things are big, you know, computer-intensive calculations. And so we think it's worthwhile and we run it through this process and the results just, you know, they really captivate people and kind of blow them away. And the only challenge for us, at least initially, and sort of wrapping our heads around it was, you know, we were used from the TV and film world, we were used to these kinds of shots being, you know, 100 frames long or 150 frames long, very quick shots, a few seconds. And when we now are working on these installations, we're talking about thousands of frames. So that's a big jump, you know, in terms of thinking and how you handle that technically.
Massive render time.
Yeah, massive render times, big, you know, lots of pixels for lots of frames. And so, yeah, so there's been a definite transition period in our thinking for that, but it's all worked really well so far.
I also think the exciting thing about these waterfalls that we've created is how we can make the waterfalls interact with the parameters of the screen or with the architecture that the screen is set against. And I think that's what really captivates people because they know it's not real, it's computer generated, and yet there it is interacting with something that's real in the space. And I think that's a huge thing.
And how that manifests itself, I watched a video of a set of waterfalls that you did for a resort in the Catskills in New York. And there's a door that pushes out or something. And so you've got the waterfalls running, so to speak, digitally, and the door pushes out in the screen. And then the water is kind of bouncing off the header of that door and off to the sides and so on. So it's very dynamic.
Yeah. And that's another really captivating thing for people is to see that actually take effect. Because again, they're well aware it's a digital waterfall. And then that door opens and the water starts bouncing along the frame of the door and playfully splashing and stuff. And then when the door closes, poof, the water just falls down again. And I think a funny story about that was that when we were in the planning stages, the administration was asking us to do this. And they thought there's no way that they'll ever be able to do such a thing, but we're going to ask for it anyway. And when we agreed and said, sure, we can do that, they thought, oh, okay, sure, let's see how this turns out. And so they were quite happy when they saw how it did turn out in the end.
And one of the interesting things about that is that particular job, if I'm remembering correctly, was you replicated or emulated a well-known set of waterfalls in that immediate area, right? As opposed to just pulling your waterfall widget out of the box.
Yeah, that's another thing that we really love because of our background again and creating photorealistic effects. We could do that. The whole design theme of Resorts World Catskills is a little unique for casinos in that they're wanting to bring the outdoors in. So they've got big windows, they've got stone, they've got natural woods inside, and they wanted this waterfall to be another example of bringing the outdoors in. So when we went to do the survey and looked around and saw other waterfalls in the vicinity and saw Stony Kills waterfall, we could replicate the geology behind that falls and bring it inside to the resort's world environment. So that worked out really well.
And without going into detail on how do you do that, what's the CliffsNotes version of how on earth would you do that?
Oh, well, we, you know, Lauren, of course, does a whole bunch of visual research on, you know, what would the different kinds of waterfalls that are there. And then what we do is using our, kind of our visual effects background, we create a version of the geology that's basically a match to the geology, but we customize it to make a wall of rock that we liked, you know, that Lauren directed, you know, worked for the in terms of color and shape and detail level in as a background for the water. And then we, you know, do the physical simulation of the waterfall in front and all the media programming to get the door to open and all that stuff so that, you know, it fits into the design environment of the space, but also, you know, is characteristic of the outer environment, the natural environment around the space. So it's, yeah, it was just a kind of a process that we run through, very similar to if you were creating doing film visual effects. Actually, we bring a similar workflow.
And Mark's background in geology also helped.
Oh yeah, yeah. Originally, I come from a geology geophysics background, so that was handy.
Yeah, that was a bit of a toss off line, but you have a doctorate in geophysical fluid mechanics.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah, previous life, you know, these things come back to haunt you, or maybe it's that they support you. Yeah, it's like it's amazing what transferable skills you can gain through life. But yeah, originally I got a PhD exactly in geophysical fluid mechanics, studying the dynamics of volcano eruptions. So formally speaking, I was a physical volcanologist in my background.
We have to do that in it. We have to do a project that involves lava flows, Mark.
Yeah, I know. We still, no one's asked us yet, but it's just prime and ready to go. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, well, you would certainly have a leg up on whoever is bidding against you.
Yeah, exactly.
I would hope so.
I actually understand this just a little bit.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So that's not exactly a normal career path that leads to forming a creative studio.
No, it's not.
It's an exciting story, though, I think, anyway.
Okay, so I was a physical volcanologist. I was actually working for the Canadian government as an expert in natural hazards at the time that this actual sort of transition happened. And what we were trying to do was figure out a way to communicate natural hazards like volcanic eruptions or landslides to villagers at the time the project was focused on the Andes of South America. So we were trying to communicate concepts, difficult concepts to villagers in little villages in high mountain areas. And they had never, a lot of these people had never even seen a map. So if you try to do it in the traditional, communicate in the traditional way by pulling a map out and saying, okay, so you're here and there's the volcano and there's going to be a problem if this thing erupts, they just didn't understand what you were talking about. So we decided that we would show them and do it with the same way that Hollywood does it, with visual effects. So I started teaching myself how to do this stuff, to create the visual effects of these kinds of things to communicate better, and eventually got really, really good at doing this kind of visual effects stuff, which I taught myself in the evenings. And then at a certain point, the software makers got to know the guys who I was using their software to do the physical simulations. They got to know me because I was asking them a lot of complex questions. And then they eventually got a call from a Hollywood studio doing visual effects that was working on the film Poseidon, the remake of Poseidon. And they needed some help doing water simulations because they were stuck. And the software company said, you got to talk to this guy here. And the next day I got a call from Hollywood, you know, it's a classic call from Hollywood. They said, we need some help with our movie. And I said, sure. When would you like me to come down? And they said, how's tomorrow look?
So that was really interesting because that's how it all took off. I mean, Mark took a leave of absence from his job. He started working with this Hollywood studio and specializing in fluid dynamics. And then it just got more and more and more work out of that. And it's just evolved, went crazy. So
that's right.
And as you were alluding to before, normally one of the effects that you do goes by in a blink in a disaster movie or an action movie, like you said, 100 frames or something. And now you're talking about an effect that might, what, last 10 minutes?
Or longer, yeah. I mean, Lauren, you mentioned what it was like when we first saw the Salesforce installation.
Oh, yeah, that was just incredible because that thing is going constantly. And it's, you know, 2.5 years later or something, and it's still going on. And it was meant to be a part of a much larger installation, which it is. And it just, because of its popularity, it just runs and runs and runs during the day, I understand. But we jumped out of the car in San Francisco to go look at the final version of it running. And you can see it from the street through the windows in the building. And it was just this remarkable experience of just seeing it going on and people enjoying it so much and taking out their phones and filming it and filming themselves in front of it and people getting picnic lunches and bringing it into the lobby so they could have lunch by the waterfall. And that's a satisfaction that you don't really get in movies when it goes by so quickly.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's a bit like, well, I guess it's very similar to doing effects for movies where you do it on a, I don't know, a 43-inch monitor, widescreen monitor, and you live with it for so long, and then you see it on a big screen, and it's like, whoa, is it the same experience?
That's exactly it.
I think it's a magnified experience. Yeah.
It is the kind of magnified, yeah. Because we had tested it on, you know, larger screens here at the studio to see the scale and that sort of thing and, you know, how it would look off your smaller screen. But seeing it there, you know, 107 plus feet wide, it was an experience that was just incredible. As much for us as it was for the other people seeing it.
Is that kind of your calling card now that I would imagine you get phone calls and emails from people saying, yeah, I saw that. I want that.
Yeah, we do a lot. And in fact, you know, the Resorts World started out with that sort of in mind. But, and the thing is, you know, you can see so many different waterfalls in nature and we can create any background. We can create any kind of character. It can be a completely different waterfall and still super impressive. Like the Salesforce waterfall would not have looked right on the Resorts World screen. It just, you know, so we redesign and discuss, you know, what kind of waterfall is best for our clients and encourage them to think about things beyond waterfalls as well.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75 plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
And I guess that's the difference between what you're doing and some of the stuff that you were referencing earlier, that it's possible to do a version of this for less cost and more generic. But if you really want to appreciate the environment and create an experience, having something that's almost commoditized is not going to work.
Yeah, it isn't necessarily going to work. Mark can speak more to that than me, but it's the, you know, shape and size of the screens are thankfully varying quite a lot now. But that does cause, you know, content has to be specific for the screen, right, Mark?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a big key with this kind of the attraction factor for how this stuff turns out is that it's built for the screen and for the environment. So like for a Salesforce, you know, the waterfall is custom built to fit exactly around the entrances to the elevators. And you can't just take that and scale it and squish it and push it onto some other screen because it just won't look right. And we're really, really accustomed to, you know, humans see water all around themselves all the time. We're really accustomed to what looks natural versus unnatural. And if you do anything weird to these things to force them into a different shape, you can tell. And if you all you wanted to do was just show a waterfall and you didn't want it to be splashing around a doorway or interacting with the left and right edges of the screen or the base of the screen as though that was a floor to bounce off of and splash. If you didn't care about any of that stuff, well, then you could just show stock footage of any old waterfall. You could put Niagara Falls up on any old screen like it was just, you know, video footage. But that immediately takes you out of the takes you out of the sense that it's real. It just, everyone will just walk by and say, oh, it's nice footage of a waterfall. But when we do things like what we did at Resorts World or Salesforce or MGM Cotai, you get this sense, this sort of locking in of the visuals with the space that you're in. And that just makes it feel like magic. People walk in and just go, whoa, my God, that's like, that's crazy. And it completely grabs their attention rather than just coasting by and continuing to look at their phones. So, yeah, makes
a big difference. And then they use their phones to take photographs of it and put it on Instagram.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So for us, it's a big deal to customize these things for each and every environment. And because the aspect ratios and size, the shapes, sizes, pixel pitches of screens are varying all over the place, it's pretty much impossible to come up with some kind of widget concept where it's like, well, you know, how many, which waterfall do you want in how many seconds? It's like, you can't, it's not something you can easily do.
And if you engaged with a hotel, restaurant, whatever it may be, who wanted to do a big canvas like this, and they said, we want our own custom waterfall, is that a 2-week project, 2-month project, 6 months? How long does that take to pull together?
Well, we've done it in all kinds of timescales.
Yeah, it depends on what they're looking for, because there's so many possibilities with these waterfalls. Like I was saying earlier, you know, you can change the background. You could have, you know, for example, a company logo behind it pushing through the waterfall, and the water all splashes around the logo, and then it recedes back into the background. You can do all kinds of cool stuff with it. Basic, straightforward, not too much detail and turbulence waterfall with, say, a black background would be what, a couple of months mark? Am I set?
Yeah, you know, you could turn something like that around in a rush in, you know, less than 2 months. But it's, the challenge with it is the simulation time and the render time, like, because they're just long. And like with these things, if you want it to look realistic, realism in something like water or fire or whatever you're talking about with natural stuff, realism translates to detail, and detail in the computer world translates to time to compute and time to render. And there's just no escaping it, that you can't have a low detail, zippy fast to simulate and render thing and have it come out looking not like jelly. You know, it just won't feel natural and real. So yeah, so that's where the time goes in. But, you know, because we're experienced with this stuff, we can turn things around relatively quickly. And I say that because 6 weeks is actually pretty quick for this kind of stuff, even though it sounds glacially slow, I have to admit, but that's how long it takes.
Simulation.
And how much of this process is creative versus science and math, like algorithms?
Oh, that's creative too.
Yeah, indeed.
You know what I mean, though. The creator producer versus the science of all the coding and the fluid dynamics and everything that you have to figure out.
It's, you know, you would imagine that it's a lot more science and tech than proportion wise than it is. It's really, I would say, around 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah. And part of that is because, like Lauren was alluding to, you can do just about anything and develop any look for these kinds of features. And so you have to put a lot of effort into, number one, designing this thing and figuring out what we're targeting to make it look like. And then number two, controlling it to make it look that way. The physics, of course, plays a fundamental role in driving the behavior, but there's so much possible that you can do and control that there's a lot of artistry that ends up going into it.
Right. So I don't want to dwell on waterfalls, because I know that's one thing that you do and it's kind of the thing that got you the attention, but you've done other kinds of projects that are not water-based.
Right.
Indeed.
Right. Yeah.
So of those, what are the ones that you, when people say, well, you know, tell me some of the projects you've done, what are the ones that you highlight?
Good question. I think one of the ones that we are pretty excited about right now is something that we designed for SNA Displays for their New York City showroom. And what was exciting about that, it was multiple screens and integrated multiple screens. So they wanted an Art Deco theme, That was pretty much the guidance. And that was, you know, they're in the heart of New York, which is so much incredible Art Deco decor and architecture there. And it was sort of, they're in Times Square. So you're in Times Square and it's just flashing and enormous screens and so much visual stimulation. So you would walk into their showroom and they wanted it to be this beautiful showpiece, but kind of a more relaxed sort of feel so that, you know, you're calm down from the craziness of Times Square. So we put together a theme with Art Deco. They had various screens of various pixel sizes and dimensions of screens. And so we wanted it to all in some way coordinate with the same visual theme and while accommodating the differences in the pixel pitches and sizes and shapes. We actually created a brand new fluid effects technology, back to fluids again, but combining it with other things. And we took Art Deco posters and had them evolve through fluid flows. So all of the colors, Mark can talk more about the technology behind that, but the colors would flow into three-dimensional fluid flows and then form another Art Deco poster. And that was on one wall. It was like a matrix, an art gallery. We had an Art Deco art gallery on that wall. Then they had another, they clad a column in LED screens, and we love that stuff because as soon as you clad a column with an LED screen, well, now you've got a box. You've got a three-dimensional space, and you don't want to just show visuals on the exterior of that column. You want to use its internal real estate and build something magical. So we built an Art Deco elevator. And it felt like you could just step inside the elevator when those doors opened. So that was exciting. It got us a finalist in the Digital Signage Awards. So we were pretty excited about that as well. We'll see how that turns out. But yeah, it was just this exciting multi-screen event sort of thing that felt really cool for us to do.
And that's really important, is it not, that when you create these visual effects, it has to create some sort of an experience as opposed to what you were saying earlier about, oh my, that's a pretty landscape.
That's what we like.
Exactly.
Something more has to happen.
Yeah, we love that because then you engage people and there's a whole point to these screens other than just, you know, scenery or contributing to the aesthetic of the space. It's something that you react to that you can feel connected with for a bit and feel different because of that experience. That when it was used for their grand opening, they had an evening party during New York's Digital Signage Week, and people came into the space for the grand opening. And it was just like stepping into a speakeasy because those screens emit their own light, as you know. So now you've got lighting for the space. So all other lights are off, and that's what's lighting the space. And there's jazz playing and this Art Deco art evolving and the elevator door opening and closing. And it was this total experience, which was really cool.
How do you engage with both end users and with suppliers? Like if you were going to do a lobby of a big office tower for one brand or for the property owners, whatever it may be, how would that work? Would the property guys find you? Are they finding you through an integrator? Are you getting engaged into these things through an integrator or a software company? Or is it like the big display guys like Sansi and so on?
It's both. I mean, not so much an integrator. We try to make ourselves really accessible to people. So people find us pretty easily. We've got a good social media presence and we're pretty easy to find. So usually it's a direct call or email, but often through, we've got great partners with digital display suppliers. And like we were just talking about, often people will put up these beautiful screens. They'll just have this enormous display and then they'll all be looking at it finally up there and go, man, that's cool. Okay, what are we going to put on it? So that's when our suppliers contact us and say, hey, you might want to talk to these guys. They need some support with their content ideas.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who does content creation in Toronto. And he related to me how he got a phone call one day from a company saying, yeah, we just put up this big video wall and we need some content to go on it. And guy said, okay, you know, when do you need this? And they said, well, this afternoon.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Just insane. But I've heard variations on that a number of times. And it's, you know, people lead with the technology and then somebody says, what about the content?
Yeah. And you know, this brings up an interesting point, because I think because all this is really taking off and it's all so new, and what the hardware is one thing to get your head around, because there's lots of choices in the hardware and, you know, different price points and all kinds of options. And then content is also this whole new world, and it's pretty easy, and especially if you need it this afternoon, to turn to what we call canned content. You know, the content that's already there created, whether it's stock footage, stock graphic art, whatever, and put that up and go, there, oh man, that looks cool. And, you know, we think it might look like a sort of a giant screensaver, but that's because we're immersed in content creation and stuff all the time. And if you're not into it and don't really understand the whole big picture, that's going to look really good for a while. You know, your circles and balls bouncing around on your screen, the canned content. But then people have to like wade into this whole world of options with the kind of content that we create, which is, you know, more customized to your space and maybe interacting with the environment. And that, you know, it's a whole other world that they have to then think about. So their project becomes enormous.
Is there a moment when you do these things and you see it in situ live when you know, okay, this worked? Is it people taking selfies or something else that's happening?
Yeah, you know, whether for better or for worse, I think that's the hallmark of a great project these days. Because if your goal is to engage people, well, that's a sure sign of engagement when people do pull out their phones and they take a selfie in front of the installation that you've done, and then it appears on social media. I mean, that's the goal. And in fact, we light our environments for social media. The SNA showroom display is a good example. We Yes. were looking at it saying, oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, it looks good. It's all set. We're ready to roll. And then the litmus test was bringing out our cell phones and taking video of the cell phones. And oh my goodness, it was blown out on your cell phone. So we had to adjust the lighting so that it would look good if you're taking a selfie or a video, because otherwise, you know, it's a big deal what happens on social media. And yeah, so we actually adjust the project.
Is there a big project you guys are working on now that will get lit up sometime in 2019?
We hope so. One of the really
that you
exciting
can talk
things
about.
Exactly right. There you go.
Well, one of the things we can talk about is we're in the stages of working with Johann Stotter. And I don't know if you know him or not, but he's this world-renowned artist for his body painting work. So he's the guy who's done these iguanas and frogs, and you see them online and you go, oh my God, that's such a gorgeous iguana. And then people start to disengage from the shape. And you see, it was really people painted to look like an iguana, and they're molded together in the shape of an iguana. So we're combining his artistry with our digital artistry. And when these people start to peel off of the main form, our liquid flows start to pour off their skin and create abstract art, and then form into the next shape. So yeah, we love collaborating with other artists and combining, you know, whether it's photography or classic painting, or in his case, body painting and digital artistry, and making the two into a spectacle. We love that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to be doing creative, that's a little more interesting than, you know, putting together car dealer ads for billboards on the highway.
That's an art in itself, though, for sure.
It is. It's its own.
Yeah.
So last thing, we're out of time here, unfortunately. I could talk for much longer, is where do people find you online?
Mm. They can get to us at, for email, it's info@fusioncis.com. That's the easiest and fastest. We have a Vimeo page that's easy to find, just Vimeo and Fusion CIS. Website, fusioncis.com, although that website does need a lot of work right now, but it's still a way in. So, yeah, various ways.
Okay. All right. Greatly appreciate the time. Looking forward to meeting you in person, and I'm sure some other people will in Las Vegas at DSE.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it too, Dave.
All right. Thanks, Dave. That was really appreciate your time.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.